Chapter 1. My First Pair of Chinese Glasses. The plane rolled to a stop at Chiang Kai-shek Airport in Taiwan and the fastened seatbelt light went off. People surged out of their seats, opening overhead bins, hoisting luggage, struggling to be first off the plane. I sat, nervous and unsure of what to do next. It was just before midnight, January 10, 1985. Here I was, my first time to Asia, alone. I did not know one person, couldn't speak Chinese, and had no idea what to do next, how to get to Taipei, or even where to stay that night. Making things worse, I'd bought a one-way ticket across the Pacific. I did have money in my pocket, but not enough to buy a ticket home. I wasn't nervous. I was scared. Chinese friends and professors at my universities had told me not to worry, that the Chinese were very friendly, and that it was easy to find work and to make friends. They were right. Phew. I was teaching English 3 days after arrival. After 3 weeks, I was living with a Chinese family and had made two groups of Chinese friends. I started to relax. Life was good. It didn't last. In the sixth week, I deeply offended the family and one group of friends and had no idea why or how I'd done it. I was embarrassed, but even more, I was confused. What had just happened? Answering that question changed my life and is the real start of this book and my career. Not knowing what happened bothered me for 2 years. It took me that long to figure it out. By then, I was hooked on trying to understand the Chinese-Western divide. My original plan was to stay 1 year in Taiwan, then 6 months in China to learn the language, then to return to the West to do a PhD in modern Chinese politics. Like all plans, it changed, and I ended up living in Chinese Asia for 14 years. Why? Well, within 6 months, I realized that what I'd learned in books about the Chinese was not quite right. The deeper I got into life in Chinese Asia, the more I realized that life on the Chinese street was different than life described in books about the Chinese. Not wrong exactly, just not quite right. An unexpected 14 years in Chinese Asia. I decided that as my goal was to learn how the Chinese really were, then to act as a bridge between West and East, the smarter thing to do was to learn about the Chinese by living with them, not by returning to the West and learning from books. I gave up the PhD idea and plunged into life in Taiwan. I married a Chinese woman, then divorced her. I started my own company and built it to 25 people, then went spectacularly bankrupt. I started over with nothing in a new career as a management consultant trainer and built a successful niche firm that has led to travel and work throughout Chinese Asia, Europe, and North America. I married another Chinese woman and we had a daughter. In 1998, I moved our little family back to Canada but kept working in Chinese Asia, traveling frequently and living in Canada but working the Chinese time zone. Now, past the 30-year mark, I look back and smile at that young man on the airplane, wondering what would happen once he got the courage to get off the plane. Life did end up good, but it wasn't always good. During my years in Chinese Asia, I had incredible highs, but even more incredible lows. I made almost every mistake imaginable, found myself in difficult, often bizarre situations. A client sued me and, alone and in Chinese, I defended myself successfully from a charge of criminal fraud. I ran afoul of Chinese gangsters over money borrowed to keep my first company afloat. For a friend, I organized an all-day outdoor rock festival, one of the first ever in Taiwan. I hired the bands, arranged MTV to cover the event, begged and bribed various levels of government to let us use a municipal stadium. Worked with artists and PR types to design the posters, logos, and bus ads, planned and made proposals to potential corporate sponsors, then babysat them once signed, and hired and managed the security and event staff. A huge effort. The concert finally went ahead, only to be typhooned by Tim. As concerts should, it ended with a bang, just one band early. The grand finale was Typhoon Tim flying the stage directions up in the air, then crashing them down on top of the drummer. Spectacular. There are more tales to tell, but you get the picture. I can't say I did it all, no one can, but I did do a lot in my years in Chinese Asia. I learned from each experience, often the type of lessons that money can't buy, but you sure can pay for. Each lesson, each mistake, and each success added to my understanding of how Chinese think, work, and communicate, what motivates them and what turns them off, what works and what doesn't. I still don't have 20/20 vision wearing Chinese glasses, but each lesson helped me see a little bit more clearly. What I saw through my Chinese glasses helped me understand why things happened as they did. Without understanding that, I surely would have burned out early like most Westerners do. Without Chinese glasses, I never would have stayed as long as I did. Getting my first pair of Chinese glasses. How I got my first pair of Chinese glasses is a story in itself. I'd been in Taiwan about 2 years and had just started my first business. I was in a taxi heading to a meeting. As usual, the taxi driver was auditioning for Death Race 2000, and I was cowering in the back seat. My plea to drive slower had only made him drive faster. He ran a red light, and I saw the car coming, and my life flashed in front of my eyes, certain I was going to die. Somehow, he avoided an accident. As my heart raced and I caught my breath, a thought popped into my head that Chinese have their own rules for doing things, for acting and communicating, and that these rules are different than my Western rules. It sounds simple, but that thought changed my life. In retrospect, I should have tipped the taxi driver.